Chapter 36. Brutal Abuse. It is wise to protect, as far as possible, a leader, instead of putting her to the front in every battle. Mary Baker Eddy, 1906. McClure's advertised their forthcoming series as a, quote, true, full, unbiased story of Mary Baker G. Eddy and of the Christian Science movement, end quote, in Ridgway's Weekly. In response, Archibald McClellan wrote to Mr. McClure, quote, from the nature of the advertisement, I assume that the half-tone cut is intended to be a portrait of Mrs. Eddy. The cut is not a portrait of Mrs. Eddy and does not resemble her in feature, outline, or expression, end quote. Even though the advertisement stated that McClure's staff had worked, quote, to make this history absolutely fair and accurate, end quote, this letter was neither responded to nor heeded. So, a 7-page introduction to their extensive, quote, accurate history, end quote, appeared in McClure's December issue with a genuine signature of Mrs. Eddy under a full-page picture purporting to be Mrs. Eddy, which was not. It was a photograph of a Mrs. Sarah C. Chevalier. This brought a great many letters of astonishment, ridicule, and correction. One correction included an affidavit from Charles F. Chevalier in Texas, who produced his copy of the same picture, together with the assertion that it was a picture of his mother. This December introduction, professing to be unbiased, presented a very biased account of the orderly crowds waiting to see the mother's room when thousands were in Boston for the dedication of the Mother Church Extension. Any reporter may have been astounded to see no unruly boisterousness among so many, but Miss Melamine's description made the scientists appear as ridiculous simpletons. This, quote, unbiased, end quote, account also stated, quote, to the normal average mind, science and health, written as it is in a cheaply symbolic style, seems hazy and obscure, end quote. The article in the January issue, which appeared in December, had no more validity than did the picture of Charles Chevalier's mother, purporting to be that of Mrs. Eddy in the December issue. The leader expressed her first reaction in these words to Alfred Farlow, quote, what you send me from McClure's magazine is too much of lies to have given a thought to, end quote. But it did cause her more than one thought, and she wrote him again, quote, do not reply to this last brutal abuse till the abusers bring out their next threatened article. Then answer both in one article from the committee, end quote. Sybil Wilbur had not been inactive since talking with Mr. Farlow. She found an obscure little struggling magazine called Human Life, which was willing to give her enough to live on while doing her research. So for the next year, Miss Wilbur followed in Georgine Millamine's footsteps with an opposite intent, that of discovering the truth and publishing it to alleviate the, quote, brutal abuse, end quote, of the malicious gossip McClure's had collected and often helped to invent. One of the lurid lies which they had encouraged came from Horace Wentworth. Horace had ridiculed Mrs. Glover and her work behind her back when she was living with his parents, which had been after the young man was married and no longer living at home. His fabrication was published in a later issue and subsequently refuted by his younger brother and sister, who had been in their teens at the time that Mrs. Glover had lived with the Wentworth family. But correspondence relating to Horace's story took place in December 1906. A letter dated December 19th from Horace Wentworth to S.S. McClure stated, "Yours of the 17th received. Thank you very much for the check. It came in the right time. I have had bad luck, and it seems like a Christmas present. Shall be glad to assist you what I can in this work of exposing Eddyism." 10 years after the publication of these lies, Horace's teenage granddaughter came to live with her grandparents for several years. In later years, she described her grandfather as a bitter, foul-mouthed man, who was generous and good-hearted underneath. But most astonishing was his Sunday morning ritual of assembling the family before breakfast and reading to them from, quote, "Mary Baker Eddy's book," end quote. The revelator to this age affected every life she touched, even that of the scoffer and liar. One acknowledged historian of that time wrote of Miss Milmine's work that, quote, "most of the statements are readily recognizable as gossip or slander," end quote. Many people, however, are not averse to reading gossip and slander, and McClure's was slandering the most newsworthy person who ever trod this globe. All the world was eager to read about Mary Baker Eddy. When Miss Wilbur's articles began appearing in Human Life in January 1907, that magazine profited enormously. The circulation, which had been approximately 20,000, shot up to nearly 100,000 within 3 months and remained high during the year of Sybil Wilbur's research and writing. At the end of that time, the little magazine fell back to normal circulation and subsequently disappeared. A great many experiences in Miss Wilbur's year of research have never been told. In her words, "There are many stories about how I wrote this life, how I waited weeks to overcome someone's prejudice, how I traced down gossip and refuted it. But all that is a story written within my own heart." A letter Helen Nixon had written to the, quote, "beloved leader," end quote, had been published in the Sentinel in November. It said in part, "I am so happy and thankful for my first, as I believe, truly spiritual glimpse of the spiritual interpretation of the pictures in Christ in Christmas. It came to me suddenly that the picture, quote, Christian Science Healing," end quote, "means this. The figure in the background is mortal self, no longer clamoring, but obeying the injunction, quote, be still and know that I am God," end quote. I used to think it was the man's wife. The figure in the foreground is the, quote, "unselfed better self," end quote, portrayed in your last message, quote, "choose ye," end quote. Oh, how good God is to us. And, dear leader, what can we do for you? Helen Nixon was ever faithful to the leader, but sad to say, when her talented young husband left Mrs. Eddy's employ, he soon left Christian Science. By 1906, he had left his wife for Laura May Fulmer of Philadelphia, but he had not prospered financially. As the year drew to a close, he saw an opportunity to make some money, and he did not spend the Christmas holidays in Philadelphia with Miss Fulmer. Instead, on Christmas Day, he dined, probably in New York City, with S.S. McClure. Before the end of December, Mrs. Eddy had decided to refute the McClure's lies herself, rather than leaving it to Mr. Farlow. She also wrote to her directors on December 28th, "Please watch the movement of the last Literary Digest that has called the attention of its readers to McClure's articles on me. And after McClure's next article appears, or even before it does, request in our periodicals that every Christian Scientist who has subscribed for the Literary Digest or McClure's magazine discontinue his subscription." 3 days later, the directors answered this letter, saying they had conferred with Mr. Farlow and tended to agree with his opinion that it would not be the best thing to do, as it might appear to the public, to be a boycott of these magazines, and also many others which have advertised McClure's article, and in that way might secure public sympathy for McClure's. Mrs. Eddy returned this letter with this note penned on it. "Beloved Board, I agree with Mr. Farlow and with you that some other means would be better. Lovingly, Mary B.G. Eddy." All this related to the world's attack on its destroyer. While meeting these attacks, the leader's work for her cause continued unabated. On December 1st, she had written to Bliss Knapp, "My beloved student, I call you mine conscientiously, for God has given you to me. And sometime the world will know this better than it now does. Lecture in the places that call for you now, and whenever called for to those that are within a day's distance of travel from your home. So soon as I have the time given me by God, I shall see you here, and then can explain many things which I should not by mail. Lovingly yours, Mary Baker Eddy." God had truly given Bliss to the leader, his chosen witness. Though many Christian Scientists of that day said that Mrs. Eddy was the woman of the apocalypse, Bliss and his father were two of the very few who really knew it. On December 5th, the leader wrote to her disciple, Calvin Hill, "Please remove your thoughts utterly away from me. Through the weakness of some students who have been here and report what I say, it is known that I have great faith in you, and so the enemy argues that you make me suffer. To meet this, take it up that you can't make anyone suffer, and no one can make you suffer. But do not think of me. Only break the law of the lie. You and the Committee on Business keep me out of your thoughts. My great struggle is with so many turning to my personality for one thing or another. But that's a lie. So banish it all into oblivion, for God is all, and there is no other mind." In a letter to Irving Tomlinson on the 10th of December, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "I find the way by experience. Hence, I am a Christian Science weather vane, constantly veering with the winds of truth." End quote. And she knew she was finding the way, the one way that is straight and narrow and leadeth unto life. When Edward Norwood had completed his assignment on the 1906 revision of Science and Health, Joseph Armstrong told him to send a bill to Mrs. Eddy for the work he had done. Mr. Norwood protested that he could never do enough for her to repay what she had done for him, to which Mr. Armstrong replied, quote, "Well, if you wish to send her a receipted bill, do so, but send it and name your own terms," end quote. So Norwood figured his six-week time at the same rate of pay for workers at Pleasant View, and early in December sent Mrs. Eddy a bill for $150, which she had marked, quote, "paid," end quote. On December 13th, Calvin Fry wrote to Norwood, "Our beloved leader sent to you yesterday by American Express a small box containing $100 in gold, and she desires to thank you for your receipted bill for services in connection with work done on Science and Health." Arthur R. Vosburgh, of the Board of Lectureship, had accomplished a first for Christian Science in Europe. Several had preceded him in lecturing in the British Isles. But on November 17th, he had delivered the first lecture in Holland to an audience of 400 at The Hague. And on November 21st, 1906, Vosburgh had delivered a lecture to an audience of over 700 in Berlin, Germany. By December 15th, he was back home in Rochester, New York, and wrote of his tour to Mrs. Eddy. "My dearest leader, I write you this to report my return, that you may know where to reach me, if for any reason you wish to do so. The work abroad is flourishing, and this is encouraging. There are over 70 places in Great Britain where services are now held. There is a fine loyalty to science and to you as its ordained leader, and good work in healing is carrying on the cause. In my lecture in Edinburgh, early in the lecture, I read your letter as published in the Boston Herald, stating you were alive and attending to your active duties, etc. And this was met by what a Scotch audience is very slow to give, that is to say, a round of spontaneous applause, which did not start with the scientists. This occurred several times in other places. In my last lecture in London, almost at its close, I refer to you as the one whom the world knows today as having wrought the work of giving Christian Science to the world, and to my surprise, I was completely interrupted by vigorous, hearty applause. The earth is today helping the woman, and the sturdy sense of justice and the admiration of real courage and integrity of the English people are appealed to by your patient and loving heroism. With earnest desire to follow closely the way of life and love that you have marked out for us, in sincere love and loyalty, faithfully in the truth, Arthur R. Vosburgh." 2 days after this letter was written, Lord Dunmore visited Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View. The next day, December 18th, he gave this statement to the press, which was published in the Boston papers. "I was immensely struck with Mrs. Eddy's personal appearance and with the activity with which she got out of her carriage unaided and stepped into the hall. When I was ushered into her presence, I could not help remarking to her that she was looking much better and younger than when I saw her last. And during the whole of our interview, which lasted for upwards of 3/4 of an hour, I was struck with the remarkable vigor of her mind and the extraordinary memory which she displayed for events which had taken place when I first had the privilege of seeing her about 7 years ago. She showed wonderful interest in everything which pertains to the Christian Science movement in Europe, and was most interested to hear how well the lectures were attended and received by the English people. A letter from Augustus Detzen, dated December 22nd, tells of one more of the leader's activities in December. My precious leader, teacher, guide, and mother in Israel, my gratitude fails to find expression in language. I wonder if it is really true that this magnificent jeweled heart, right from God's holy messenger, love's chosen love, is mine, or if I am dreaming. The treasure is most exquisite, but the dearest of all the world to me is the picture of the dear mother and leader within the heart. I shall always wear this treasure as a reminder of the long years of your tireless care, your patient forbearance and love, your prayers and tears and toils for humanity and for me. The leader wrote Augusta on December 28th. Thanks for your letters, the one before it sent to our press. It should be out in the Sentinel. So much is on the tapis. All may not go as we wish, but God reigns, and I love him supremely, and I try to love my enemies. Be strong. Be wiser than serpents. Watch, pray, work, and God will work with you and make the evil less than before. Every trial of our faith should make us stronger, purer. Give my love to your dear students, comfort and support them. It had been on the 31st of October that Mrs. Eddy had written her trustees that she would like the Sentinel cover to be colored. But this had proved to be more difficult than it sounded. It was not accomplished until the issue of December 22nd, which her trustees sent to her on December 21st with this letter. Beloved leader, we are pleased to send you herewith two copies of the current issue of the Christian Science Sentinel, the first number with the color cover page. We trust this will meet your expectations, and if so, we will ask our printers to arrange to do the work in the most economical way. This, however, will necessitate the putting in of an expensive rotary color press, and they will gladly do so if we assure them that the color cover page will be used permanently. Obediently and affectionately yours, the Board of Trustees of the Christian Science Publishing Society, by Allison V. Stewart. This first color cover was not entirely satisfactory, as they had left a white border. Mrs. Eddy wrote on the bottom of their letter, quote, "Be sure to extend the color all over the page and leave no white margin. M. B. Eddy," end quote. The next issue had no white margins, but was followed by this letter from the leader to Mr. McClellan. "I thank you. I had no idea that your specimen to me of one side of our Sentinel in blue meant to leave the other side uncolored. Be sure to have both sides of the cover blue." It was January 1907 before both front and back covers were a light shade of blue. But the major changes appeared on December 22, 1906. The cover for that issue had been redesigned. The original, quote, "Lady with a Lamp," end quote, with eyes closed, had appeared on each side of the Sentinel cover in September. The new design presents a more mature type of womanhood, with eyes open, the pedestals bearing Longfellow's poem, on which the lady stands, are in turn standing on a solid foundation, labeled the Christian Science Publishing Society. Early in the 1880s, Mrs. Eddy placed the Christian Science seal on the cover of Science and Health. When her Journal of Christian Science, quote, an independent family paper, end quote, founded in 1883, was renamed the Christian Science Journal and given a cover in April 1885, the cross and crown seal was the central emblem of the cover design, and it continued to be prominently displayed on the journal cover as long as Mrs. Eddy was here. This significant emblem also appeared on the front of the first issue of the Christian Science Weekly in September 1898, and when the weekly became the Sentinel, the Christian Science seal continued to appear on the cover every week through August 1906. Mary Baker Eddy had had a resurrective experience in 1866, which had taught her how to, quote, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons, end quote. The way was the cross, glorified by the crown. She had taught this way to all her students, that they might go and do likewise. And she had epitomized this resurrective way in her Christian Science seal, which she placed upon all her periodicals and all her writings, with the exception of the manual. But Mary Baker Eddy was more than the discoverer of Christian Science. Her discovery of Christian Science led her to the discovery and understanding of her own identity. She was God's chosen witness, the embodiment of the motherhood of God, as Jesus was the embodiment of God's fatherhood. God's, quote, two witnesses, end quote. Quote, the two olive trees, end quote. Quote, the two candlesticks, end quote, were Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, exemplifying the manhood and womanhood of God. Revelation 11. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and kill them. And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry, and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwelt on the earth. And after 3 days and a half, the Spirit of life from God entered into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them. And they heard a great voice from heaven, saying unto them, come up hither. And they ascended up to heaven in a cloud. Jesus' disciples knew his identity no more than did the disciples of Mary Baker Eddy know hers. Following his resurrection, Jesus talked at great length with two of his disciples on the road to Emmaus. Quote, and beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. End quote. Luke 24, verse 27. He gave us a verbal picture of his identity. Mrs. Eddy, through her artist at the easel, James F. Gilman, gave us a visual picture of her identity. Jesus gave to the world the resurrection. But in the ascension, he was out of their sight. even the sight of his own disciples. Mary Baker Eddy's mission began where Jesus is left off. From the time of her discovery, her whole experience was resurrective. By the time of the dedication of the Mother Church Extension in the summer of 1906, the woman had spent 40 years in the wilderness, literally from 1866 to 1906. And the resurrection which Jesus had inaugurated had been proclaimed and heard around the world. That marked the completion of her wilderness experience and of the resurrection era. The ascension era was beginning. Would her disciples be able to see her? In August of 1906, Mrs. Eddy had announced to the closest of her disciples, Augusta Stetson, quote, "I have risen," end quote. She is the forever leader to be followed, and she proclaimed this fact to those who have eyes to see, those who would be the, quote, "watchmen on the walls of Zion," end quote. Once again, she has given us a visual picture. The resurrective symbol, the Christian Science seal, was removed from her sentinel and replaced by the, quote, "lady with a lamp," end quote, the symbol of the forever leader. Is not the message clear that the way beyond the resurrection into the ascension is to follow the leader? There is one more message that would keep the true follower close to his leader. When she asked her trustees to remove the cross and crown from the new sentinel cover in August 1906, she wrote the following and had it hand-delivered. Statement: to the Christian Science Board of Directors, no student of Christian Science shall occupy a position of trust or confidence in this cause who does not daily declare the truth at least 3 times in his prayers for the well-being of his leader, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, the Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy. Can the above be made a bylaw in our manual? How many of those who profess to be the woman's followers today daily declare the truth about their leader? Is this for her well-being or our own? Death will never be overcome until we rise above the resurrection era to the ascension era, and there is only one way. Quote, "He that climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber," end quote. John 10, verse 1. Augusta Stetson knew not the cost, but she was ready and willing in 1906 to follow her leader into the ascension era. This is a vital decision and a moment important for truth. Are we ready and willing today to make this momentous decision and to heed our leader's words? The Christian Scientist who is faithful to this cause and its leader will reap rewards spiritual and blessedness beyond the power of human thought to conceive. Will you join your leader in this, refusing sensuality, animality, lust in any of its forms? Oh, dear ones, I know the cost, and I know the joy. Will you, can you, rise in this moment important for truth?